Blog Talk Radio.
This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio. Tonight's show is Abolishing Probate, and our guest is Terry Kennedy. Now, before we get started here, Luann Fleming is with me. She's going to be co-hosting. Say hello, Luann.
Hello. How's everybody doing?
Hello. And you heard everybody go, fine.
And, we're good.
But we're good, yes.
We're good.
And We've already got a full call board, so if you try to call in to listen by phone, I'm sorry, you're not going to get there. You can still listen over the internet. Just simply click the link. It'll take you right to the Blog Talk Radio channel and our show, and you can listen to it there. With that said, we're continuing this fight over these probate courts, and the more we get into this, the more we find out what a contrived and evil system it is. I don't know how much we have to expose, how badly these cases have to become before we can get politicians, we can get the government on some level to act on behalf of the people. They are culling the elderly. They are snatching them, kidnapping them, medically kidnapping them, forcing them into these institutions, guardianizing them, and of course then the guardian presents themselves as that person. This is actually the ultimate in identity theft, and away we go. They start tapping the estate until they wrench every dime out of it, and they do it day after day, month after month, year after year. Now, we have gone to, myself, I've visited with approximately 26, what would you want to call them, those hired hacks out in D.C., state level. Also, you can't get anywhere. All you get is pandering and platitudes and, oh, yes, they're going to do something, but they never do. And so we are on our own out here, and it's going to take all of us working together to force them to put an end to this system. No one should be subjected to this. No one should have their identity taken from them, and this is exactly what happens in probate. Why this happens is to allow them to render all of your constitutional rights and protections, all your rights within and under the law, as moot. You don't exist anymore. You have suffered a statutory civil death. It means, in its consequences, the same thing as suffering a physical death with all the same benefits of that. You ain't here. We don't care. And this is exactly what's going on. Now, we have exposed this for going on 9 years now. And like I say, I personally have met with more than 25 politicians, officials, whatever the hell you want to call these people that sit out there in the District of Criminals, and they're all going to do something. Oh, they're just gravely concerned. Why, they had no idea this was going. Yeah, they did. They just won't do anything about it. One of the most egregious things that has happened recently was the passage of S-178, the probate. What was it, Elder Justice and Protection Act, which was nothing more than a reiteration of standing state and federal laws on internet fraud, wiretap scams, all kinds of things like that, but did absolutely nothing to protect the elderly. Now, it was brought up to me that now we have these district attorneys who are going to be addressing guardianship issues. Now, let me tell you how this works. Unless you can get out of these probate tribunals and into the federal arena, that federal district, whatever, poobah, isn't going to do anything. They can't. They are prohibited by law for the same reason that SCOTUS has the probate exception doctrine, which says that anything that is in rem, meaning in motion, in the state, is the property and control of the state. Therefore, they will not interfere. They will not intervene. They will not hear any probate, family court issues. And when you're talking probate, you are actually talking the probate system, which includes family court, child support, custody hearings, all of that comes in under probate. So this is a very convenient way of getting the federal government off the hook to allow them to avoid addressing constitutional issues. And by the way, I'm going to say this for the 1,000,000th time, the only function of the Supreme Court of the United States is supposed to be comparing the laws that are brought before it to the Constitution and determining if that law is constitutional. That is the only power they are supposed to have. And of course, as we know, they're making law from the bench. They're creating their own rules and regulations. They're doing whatever they want. They are so politicized that they basically are useless to us based on what they should have been initially. They were supposed to be the overseers of everything. And this situation would never have occurred had they been doing the job they were supposed to do. But of course they didn't. And by the way, they are their own bar association. And in order to hear, get a case heard in front of them, you must be a member of another bar association, 4 years in good standing. Then you apply to SCOTUS's bar to have your case heard. This is a monopoly, which is illegal in this country. Monopolies are not supposed to exist. So as a result of that, what we're seeing is this growing movement to disbar the bar. With that being said, our guest tonight has a story that's going to stand your hair on end. And I'm going to just read a little bit first from her bio, because I think it's important that you understand this isn't somebody who just came in out of the trailer park and had a story to tell. Her name is Teresa K. Abba. I hope I pronounced that correctly, Terry Kennedy. Mm-hmm. And she goes by Terry, and she is a Harvard Business School trained strategist, entrepreneur, award-winning author, and former vice president at MTV Networks. Oh, how did you do all of that? As president of Power Living Enterprises Incorporated, she offers strategy consulting, executive training, and motivational content. You need to work with me on that one, Terry. Okay, in 2009... she was named a young global leader by the World Economic Forum, recognizing her professional accomplishments, commitment to society, and potential for shaping the future of the world. And you can learn more about her at Terrick, TERRIK.TV. And she is an elder justice advocate and launched elderdignity.org. That's www.elderdignity, just like it sounds, .org in 2016. And with that, Terry, welcome to the show.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Yes. Before we get started here and really get into the big conversation, can you give our audience a synopsis, a background of what has happened here to Dr. Lily Sykes Waite?
a brief 7-year history.
Yes.
You know.
You have 2 minutes.
Right. My aunt Lily is the matriarch of our family, my mother's side of the family. And she was happily, independently living her life, retirement in Florida, in Palm Coast, Florida, in 2012, when a family friend, and I use that now lightly, entrapped her in an involuntary guardianship. He invited her to visit him in Winter Park, Florida, and it wasn't unusual. My family's known him since the 1960s, and he kind of kept her there, actually, you know, while he filed for plenary guardianship without any of the family knowing. So that's actually how it started.
Okay.
And eventually my aunt called my mother, who is her only living sibling, her sister, and said, "I've been served these papers. It says I'm incapacitated, and I'm not incapacitated." And so that started the discussion and us wondering, you know, what's going on, and this family friend basically hanging up on us and saying, "Talk to my attorney." And so that was in 2012, and my mother was able to kind of push him off in a sense where she, you know, hired an attorney. My aunt was astute enough and not incapacitated because she called 911 one night when the phone was free and said, you know, I'm Dr. Lilias White. I'm being held against my will. Please come and get me. And the police came. And she was able to leave. And we went to court. And the judge at that point in Orange County said there was no need for a guardianship. So this is 2012, and there's no need for a guardianship. She's a free woman. But in the meantime, the family friend got a hold of the estranged granddaughter. And instead of her saying, "Why are you taking advantage of my grandmother?" she joined forces with him. And that is what kept this in the court for 7 years, is that she hired a firm and they instigated litigation after the judge in Orange County said there was no need for a guardianship. And
you
so
know,
that's
Terry,
how it started.
I didn't mean to interrupt there, but a lot of times, and Luann can attest to this, what they do is they look for sibling rivalry. They look for a way to drive a wedge in, and they look for that one family member who is more than willing to stand up, lie, turn cartwheels, do whatever they have to get control. And they work that person. They don't realize that they are being used. Now, Luann, do you think I'm wrong on that?
Absolutely not wrong. I've seen it over and over. I get nonstop calls coming into our shows and into our, you know, www.faceus.org. We have so many complaints of the sibling rivalry. And the thing that's scary about that is that many families nowadays are dysfunctional. Okay, we're just going to put it out there. And, you know, but they prey on that. They even prey on people that aren't dysfunctional. They prey on everybody.
Well, the thing is is that it was a simple trust issue. My aunt had a revocable living trust. And she decided, after she realized who the granddaughter was, she didn't really know the granddaughter. My cousin, her alleged father, it divorced her mother when she was a baby. And so there was always the question of paternity. He went on and got married and had another family, and she never grew up with any of us. So I have 50 nieces, there are 50 cousins, you know, nieces and nephews and all, none of us know her. And so, you know, she showed up, and my aunt said, "Okay, I'm taking her out of my trust." So she did that, and it was her right to do it as the grantor. She had not been declared incapacitated or anything, and so it was always a very simple trust issue. But the granddaughter's firm, as you said, they instigated litigation, and they kept on saying there's a family dispute. There was never any dispute. It was simply my aunt saying, "I don't want this young lady in my trust anymore."
Terry, can I ask you, what was the basis of them declaring her incapacitated?
She was paranoid. Let me see. Paranoia was a big one, which was, I laugh. I mean, it's not funny now, but after 2012, they kept on coming at her, saying she's incapacitated, she needs to come in front of the examiners, and they persisted enough that she had an examination. There were three people in a room together, for 20 minutes. And one basically said she had paranoia because she said that there are three people trying to take her money, and she named the three people.
Oh.
Now, of course, that is not paranoia. She was very specific to who was after her. And the examiner did not understand the details of the case, so he said that she was paranoid. And another examiner basically said that she didn't know her mortgage amount, but it was on auto pay, and she's managing a sizable estate. And then the third examiner said that she didn't know the parties to World War II.
Oh, good Lord. Oh, please stop.
So,
did they ever have her examined by a psychiatrist? Not that that means anything these days, but did they ever have her?
In the process of the years, because again, it was
years,
but she had at least two good examinations that said that she has the capacity to decide her estate, and one was a very respected psychiatrist in Florida. And he examined her twice, but they kept on pushing back. They ended up making it stale. You know, this firm, for the granddaughter's firm, they obviously know the ins and outs of this kind of exploitation. And so they used every game in, you know, every trick in the bag, I guess. You know, to make good reports stale and to keep the litigation going over multiple years. Now, in Orange County, my mother was named limited guardian and trustee. Now, because of that faulty examination, they said, okay, she needs a guardian. And so my aunt said, if I need anyone, I want my sister. And she testified to that in court in Orange County. But when it was moved, now here's the crux of it. When the case was moved to Flagler County was when the exploitation through the court escalated.
Okay, wait a minute. How did it get moved from one county to another county? How did that happen?
Well, the family friend lived in Orange County, so that's where all of this started. But her home in Palm Coast is in Flagler. So at a certain point, the court simply said, we need to move it, you know, to her home, you know, county.
Yes, because they lack jurisdiction. That's why.
Right. And we didn't, at that point, as a family, had no idea that this was something that happened across the country. So as most families, you know, we're relying on the attorneys. And there were actually a couple of decent attorneys early on, but they didn't have the weight and and obviously the history in this as the larger firm, the granddaughter, had. And now that we look back and we've traced the history and we outlined fraud on the court from the beginning, we can see their strategic moves.
Right. And isn't it something when you do, and hindsight always being 20/20, and you look back and you can see this pattern of activity that facilitates what they're doing? It has nothing to do with law.
Right.
It has nothing to do with jurisdiction. It has nothing to do with anything but how to maneuver that person they've targeted into a position where they have no way to fight back.
Right.
They have
absolutely
no way to fight back.
Exactly. And you mentioned that sometimes a family member doesn't even know. As a granddaughter, I don't think she realized what she was even getting into because right now we suspect that the lawyers are running everything at this point, and she's really just kind of out there and will get whatever she's going to get. But the attorneys are the ones really maneuvering. And the irony is that my aunt early on said, if she had just apologized to me, then I might have forgiven her. My aunt said that, you know, very early on. And now I doubt she feels that way. But we could have avoided all of this if the granddaughter came to her senses, because no one else in our family would have gone against my aunt's wishes. It's her money. Whatever she wants to do with it, she can do with it. Now, no one out of all the 50 nieces and nephews and grandnieces and nephews, no one was objecting to anything. time. And so that's the other point, is that they're saying there's a family dispute, but again,
right.
it was simply a trust issue.
Right.
Right.
You know, recently I came across some information about probate and trust, and I was reading through some federal laws, and I'm doing some more research on this, Terry, and I will pass it along to you when I got it done. But there is a federal law that prohibits probate from tampering with a trust. They're not supposed to touch trusts. And, of course, it happens every day. We know it does. The first thing that hearing examiner, those are not judges. They're hearing examiners or ministerial clerks. They work for all of the same people that are coming against you, including social services agencies and APS. And that's where their paycheck is coming from. Plus, they get a percentage of the estate. Every time a motion is taken into that tribunal, that judge gets a percentage of that estate. And on the East Coast, that tends to be 5 to 6%. And as you move west, it gets to be 3 to 4%. Why there's that variance in that, I don't know. But see, it behooves them to allow those attorneys to keep filing motions. And if you did the same thing the attorney does, they'd say you were a vexatious litigant. You were filing frivolous motions.
Mm-hmm.
But they would be capping her estate for every time they had to appear in court, and the judge would be making money too. But eventually what they will do is prohibit you from filing another motion. There again, if you were in a court of law, they couldn't do this. They could not stop you. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, well, the Flagler County Court, again, I'll make the distinction because there were actually two decent judges in Orange County, and they kept pushing back. And they kept on questioning what was going on. But then in Flagler County, it changed entirely. As soon as it was moved, the judge there basically ignored the Orange County orders and suspended. She appointed her own people. She was following the direction of the granddaughter and her and their firm. They might as well just been working for them. And she appointed three agents. She appointed first a guardian ad litem, then a guardian ad litem, the attorney ad litem, and then she suspended my mother with no hearing, no due process, nothing, and then put in her own guardian. And so those three people have been working together with the granddaughter's firm and the granddaughter to keep my aunt and trapped. And the very first day the emergency temporary guardian was named, she filed, and you've heard this before with other families, she filed a false missing person claim with the Flagler County Sheriff's Office.
Uh-huh.
And thank goodness, the officer was a female officer, and she thought it was so unusual, the circumstances, that she wrote up a report. And the report is in our favor in the sense that we have been able to substantiate that it was fraudulent, their statements, and by other things they've said in court. Now, they knew that my aunt was at home with my sister, and they also were saying that my mother had incentive to do something to her sister. So basically they were saying to law enforcement that my mother was going to do something to her sister. And then the officer came by, and they also said the house was abandoned. So the officer came by and said everything is neat, the grass is done in the house. And I talked to, White, and she didn't seem incapacitated to me. And so everything in the report is opposite of what they were claiming. And the last thing in the report was that the guardian said, I'm going to make living arrangements for her. Now, she had never met my aunt. She hadn't met my aunt yet. She had not been in the home yet. And so that speaks to premeditation and,
yes,
a one-size-fits-all plan. She didn't even know who she was, and she was always already going to move her out of her home.
This is
which
one
she
of the
ended
things,
up doing.
Yeah, right. One of the things I have pointed out repeatedly, these guardians go into these courts or these tribunals. They make all these unsubstantiated claims about, you know, they're living in squalor and filth and, oh, they're you're being abused and used. And they couldn't identify that person in a one-person lineup.
Right.
Most of the time, they never see them. And if they do see them, it's usually once they have captured them. And this is, in my estimation, these are my words, I'm speaking for myself here, this is the same as kidnapping. This is taking a hostage. And they hold them hostage in these institutions that participate, who get paid handsomely for doing so. And they isolate them immediately. And we talked about that earlier, about isolation and what that does to people. And I want to talk about that later on in the conversation. But Teresa, you spoke about her being taken involuntarily from her home. Talk about that a little bit.
Okay, so think about July 1st, 2016, that's when the guardian is appointed and there's a false missing person claim. So over the month of July and going into August, every day there was something harassing, you know, from the guardian, from the attorney ad litem. So it was escalating. But still, my aunt was happy and safe in her home. There was a second police report in August that confirmed that as well. And so they, again, looking back, it was clear they were putting certain steps in place, but we didn't know that. And on August 30th, August 23rd, I think it was, that the guardian, they sent a letter and said to my mother and my sister, you can't be in the home. Now, my sister was my aunt's caregiver and companion, and she was there since 2012. Since this whole thing began, she flew from New York to Florida and didn't leave. She was there for the duration, and the judge in Orange County said, your aunt speaks highly of you. Will you be around her during this? And she said, sure. And she had just finished a divorce, and she was able to be mobile at the time. So my sister had been there for 5 years, and my mother had been back and forth between New York and Florida. And so the guardian sends a letter saying, you have no right to be in the home. So that happened on the 23rd. And then on the 29th, my mother responds with what's called an injunction motion that basically said that my aunt wanted to be in her home. They have no right to kick them out, that kind of thing. So the very next day, August 30th, my aunt goes to the doctor with my sister, regular doctor's appointment. And the receptionist calls my sister in the other room and says the computer's broken. Now, I say it that way. She says the computer's broken. And so my sister has to fill out paper in the other room. When my sister comes back, my aunt's gone. She's just gone.
Oh, my God.
And the guardian and the attorney ad litem took her, like literally just seized her.
So they kidnapped her.
They kidnapped her. And the person at the front desk of this hospital, my aunt had known for a long time. And later on, I spoke to this person, and she said, oh, they shuffled her out. This is the word she used. They shuffled her out and put her in a car. And so in my eyes, that is kidnapping.
Yes.
And so we went to, you know, my mother had an attorney at the time, and the attorney was making all the proper, you know, steps, trying to call the guardian and the attorney. And that evening, they basically said, we put her in respite. That was one line in an email. And then the next day they said, we are not going to disclose her location. My mother's attorney did what was proper, what we thought was proper, and put in emergency motions for judicial review, all the things that my mother had the right to do, and the judge simply ignored it. The judge simply ignored it. And so at that point, I'm thinking, my sister and I now fly down to, I fly to Florida from New York, and I had been going back and forth. So the one thing I didn't say, which becomes important, is that at the end of July, I flew to Florida, And we had this ongoing family legacy project for multiple years. We've had film, we've been filming family members talking about our history and all. And so I said, okay, let me continue the filming, but I'm going to ask Aunt Lily some more specific questions. And so I have hours of footage of her in the last week of July. And some of it is up on elderdignity.org. And so when I put that up, that caused a stir. That might have prompted them to take her because you could see that she was not incapacitated and it was opposite what they put in the court documents. What you see on the videos is opposite of what they put in the court documents. And so they needed to take possession of the body, as they say. And they did. And we have not seen her since, and it's been over 2 years. It's unbelievable.
Oh, my gosh.
What do you think, Luann?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Like, it's just, you know, the only thing I can say is abolish probate court, period. You know.
Yes.
All of it. I mean, I hear these stories, and they're not getting any better. They keep getting worse and worse.
Exactly.
And it's just disheartening that this our United States, the whole world's going through this right now, I believe.
Yeah. As a result of the summit, the video from the summit, Luann, we've heard from people in Italy now, France, England, Germany, Australia, all saying the same thing. In fact, we're trying to get the hookups so that we can get these people on air here. And they're talking about doing this. They're doing the same thing there, and they are using the same system. They are modeling it on the system here in the U.S. And this is a culling that is happening of the elderly, now gone global. They want rid of us. We are a waste population, but they want to rob us first if you've got anything to be taken. Teresa, in all of this, this determination that your aunt was incapacitated, it used to be incompetent. As I brought up at the summit, that required evidence. And you went to the extreme of having her examined, someone did, and she comes out, she's fine, she's fully competent. And yet this is ignored by the court. So the word incapacitated is substituted because it can mean absolutely anything. And it does mean anything. And as you've seen in this case, now I'm wondering why, since your aunt was taken by force against her will and through subterfuge, this is a kidnapping. Why can't they be charged with kidnapping?
Well, that actually is my argument right now. And I can't go into all the details, but we are, you know, moving for federal intervention. And I've been making a very logical case to the powers that be that, you know, this is kidnapping, it's fraud, it's racketeering, it's human trafficking. And it meets the three constituent elements of the UN, you know, protocol on trafficking. And it's not an outrageous claim. They took her under deception and through abuse of power. They're harboring her. And they're doing it for the purpose of exploitation. And in this instance, it's financial exploitation. It's a form of servitude. And that is trafficking.
It is trafficking. And it also violates the UN Charter against torture. Isolation is the number one listed evidence of torture is isolating because of what it does to the human mind to be isolated. As we talked earlier, and something I want the audience to understand, when you are being told by the media and politicians and people who have a vested interest in keeping this system going, that we just simply dump our old people in these nursing homes and walk away and we never come back and, oh gosh, isn't it terrible? We just don't want our old people. Nothing could be further from the truth. We need to change the dialogue, the national dialogue on this so that people understand that is not what happens. They are immediately isolated. This is against the statute in every state. Isolation is to be the last resort, and it is always the first thing done. Now, what it does to the person psychologically, mm-hmm. is that they begin to deteriorate. It's like babies who fail to thrive. If they don't get attention and love and touch, they wither and they die. The mm-hmm. same thing happens to our elderly people. When they don't have that contact with family, friends, their religious affiliations, whomever it is, people that are known and familiar and trusted by them, they begin to wither. Now, what happens while they're in there? We have these guardians and even personnel from the nursing home saying, you were abandoned. They don't want you. The reason they're not here is because they don't care about you. The only person you've got is me. And I'm the only one that cares about you. And if judging by the level of care they provide, apparently they hate them. But it's just, I mean, it's quite obvious. But this psychologically, this isolation is so damaging. And they do begin to wither and they do begin to withdraw. And that one of the excuses I've heard so many times in hundreds of cases is that they will say, well, you can't visit them because you upset them. Yes, they do get upset.
Oh, I have to stop you on that.
Yes, go ahead.
Right. Well, only because that is such a hot button for me because it, later on, they gave no explanation for taking her for the first 3 weeks. And then they, because I wrote an article, now this goes to even this show and media, and when you shine a light, you know, on what's going on, the thieves like to hide in the dark, right? And so you shine a light and they begin to scurry. And so, you know, I wrote an article 2 weeks in after she was abducted, you know, called Is Elder Guardianship a New Form of Human Trafficking? It was on the Huffington Post. It was right before the UN General Assembly was opening. I timed it. I knew the timing would be good. And it caused a bit of a stir, and we put into the court documents just what you're saying. We put in that isolation, the studies show cognitive decline, depression, all of these
yes.
different things for not being around family. So, but the guardian response, there were two things. One, suddenly we were agitating her. Now, that had never
yes.
come up before.
Right.
And if you call singing together, you look at the videos, we're singing together. I mean, you see a clear, good relationship.
Yes.
And so it's like, well, okay, where did that come from? The evidence. And then, you know, the second thing is at one point, the guardian or the attorney ad litem, because they were joined at the hip, said that, oh, she's with people, and she goes on outings.
My response to her,
and this was, I said to her face, you know, I said, okay, it's like she's a slave and she's in the big house because
yeah.
she now can, you know, be in a nice environment. But the fact is, the bottom line is, she does not want to be there. She was taken against her will. She could be at the Ritz-Carlton, and we don't care because she should not be there. She should be in her home.
Right. And that you've made such a salient point there, this thing of telling you, oh, well, we take her out on social outings. Well, if she can have social outings, you should be able to see her. And
exactly.
these people do get upset because they think if they see you, they're going home. They don't understand why you can't take them home. And then they
well,
use
on that,
that
point,
as – go ahead.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you. On that point, my mother finally had two phone calls last year because we kept pushing and pushing and pushing, October and December 2017. And both calls, it was very clear there were two sisters who love each other, who missed each other. And my aunt said, I want to go home. And she said, I want to see you on both calls. And the guardian did nothing. Well, actually, she did do something. She put my aunt's house up for sale after that.
Oh.
So my aunt says, I want to go home. And then she puts her house up for sale.
Did she
so
sell
angry.
It?
Well, that's the other interesting thing. Is that
oh, no.
As soon as I found out that it was up for sale, I do my own investigating. I find the realty company. I talk to the realtor. And I tell them what's going on. And he indicated, oh,
she's done work with our firm for years. So that made me think, oh, okay, this is how she liquidates, you know, the seniors' homes. And so that was in March. And now, just a few weeks ago, we find out, it was under contract in March. And a few weeks ago, we find out that she's putting a new roof on the house, the garden.
Oh.
It doesn't need a roof. It doesn't need a new roof. And so that speaks of racketeering.
I would look to see what her relationship is with the roofing company that's doing the
exactly.
roofing, because many times what we find is this is a relative or a brother, mm-hmm. you know, an uncle, somebody that needs work or just can use a lot of extra cash. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And
right.
They'll hire them to do work that doesn't. Go ahead.
That happened in my family.
Okay. It happened to your family.
Yep. It happened to mine. When the public administrator had her secretary's husband come and remodel, you know, the homes and put garbage cans over there that didn't need to be taken over there. They go in and they take people's stuff out of their homes and all that stuff. Yeah. There's the secretary's husband.
Well, the sad thing, all of it's sad, but the thing that's just so heart-wrenching is that, and you can see on one of the videos, I'm asking my aunt about the house, and she's so proud. She designed the house, and she moved from Maryland to Florida with her, the love of her life, my uncle, and then he died in 2003, but they were sweethearts, and this house, they designed together. There, it was so much of him in this house. And on one video, she points at the certain features that were special to her and different things. And so now they have emptied out the entire house. They sold, they liquidated everything. And it's just heart-wrenching.
And
so
what happened to the proceeds
win,
from that? What happened to the proceeds
question.
From that?
Good question.
What happened to personal items like family heirlooms, that type of thing?
I suppose they threw them out or they sold them. We have a picture.
Oh, jeez.
A friend took a picture of a dumpster, and a lot of her things were in this dumpster. And I have footage of the house in July. I went through every room. Now, something told me to do this. I didn't know she was going to be taken. But I went through every, like, I used to work in media, so that my media hat went on. And I was like, okay, let me go through every room. And you see everything was pristine and in its own place. Again, this is the house they said was abandoned. And then to see it all in a trash can, a dumpster, is just, it's horrible. So then if we win, in quotes, where does she go?
Yeah. Do you know, we had another case here last year, a young man named Jeffrey Hennel, and they did the same thing, exactly the same thing, and they trashed his mother's home. And one of the things that just broke this young man in half was he found the ashes of his father in the dumpster.
Oh,
and
golly.
It
okay.
nearly destroyed him. And in many of these cases, what we find, Lisa Belanger out there in Boston, they went through her father's personal possessions, lifted all kinds of valuable objects, never included it on the inventory, and then claimed it never existed, although these items were all insured and they had pictures of them. But they get away with this stuff all the time. It's nothing but court-sanctioned theft. Now, if you or I did the same thing, if you had walked into your aunt's home and began availing yourself of whatever was in there of value that you thought you might like to have, you'd get arrested and go to prison.
Right.
But,
right.
you know, now I figured out a way around this, Terry. We all need to become guardians. There's no requirements. I mean, basically, I mean, we got that one down there in Sarasota that was bankrupt.
I'm already guardian ready.
You are. Well, I'm going to be a guardian.
Yeah, I'm legal guardian
and
of my mom.
Yes,
it takes less to be. You know, I've taught yoga and meditation for 16 years because I grew up with all of this in addition to my normal work. And it takes more to be a yoga teacher, at least 200 hours of training, than to be a guardian. And so it's just is outrageous. You asked the question, where did the proceeds go? Now,
yes.
We don't know because in September of 2016, so 3 weeks after they took her, they stripped her of her last two rights in a closed hearing. Yeah, and they had this hearing. She was not, they waived her right to be there, and they kicked my mother out because she wasn't a lineal descendant. Now, that sounds very arcane. And so it was a closed hearing. There was no cross examination of the examiner, and there was something wrong with each of the reports. And they stripped her of her federal right to vote and her right to choose with whom to socialize, which is what they were going for. And because then it gave them greater right to block the family. And so that happened, and then this is the other important thing is that they bifurcated the docket. So that's when they started to have a secret docket, basically, that my mother and sister could not see. And they just bifurcated the docket again recently, and all the financial information is in that secret docket.
Uh-huh. Well, and this is very common also. And, you know, you spoke about the fact that they stripped her of her rights, her right to vote. One of the reasons in many, many, many of these cases they leave them with the right to vote is because it's the one thing that can be used under the Americans with Disability Act, their right to vote, and the Equal Rights Act, the right to vote, okay? And so they will leave that in place so that you can't access either of those laws. Now, it strikes me odd they took that vote away from her. It does leave a door open for you there, and there are experts in that field can talk to you about it. But this I spoke about also at the summit, the fact that your rights are taken from you because you're incapacitated, they claim. No evidence. They don't have to produce any. Now, even if this was true, Terry, let's say she was incapacitated, wouldn't the moral, ethical thing to do be tighten down and protect her rights, her identity, her assets, mm-hmm. rather than throwing her to the wolves? And these are wolves. These are pure sociopaths that do this. You could not do this and be a normal human being. You can't. It's
right.
Not possible.
And I agree.
You know, you cannot, you could not prey on other people that are vulnerable and abuse this system in this way. We need to get to the point where we have to demand that this stops. And I don't know how many of these cases that we have mm-hmm. to expose. I've done over 600 of them just on this radio show. And Luann, I don't know how many you've done. I know several hundred also.
About 125 of them.
Yeah. And what is it going to take to get this stopped?
We're moving toward, my gut says we're moving toward, you know, a tipping point in the sense that now we have social media. There are other outlets to shine a light on what's going on, and it's beginning to bubble up. And you mentioned the S-178. Now, I'll take any law that can be leveraged in some way that to put pressure, that it might not solve everything, but if you can find levers to begin to put pressure and also to, as my brother said, shame them. So, you know, and this is something through social media and even the state, like Florida, as a retirement haven. It's no longer a retirement haven if this is allowed to be happen. Like my sister said, basically it's a retirement hell, and that you need to, if you're boarding a plane going to Florida, they need to do a travel advisory, a warning, to say if you're over, you know, a certain age, you have to be aware that you can be kidnapped and the government won't do anything. And it sounds like a Saturday Night Live skit, but this is
what is happening. So if we get that message out more and more through this type of radio show, through social media, I think that will push it along, as well as, you know, using every bit of law that comes. Now, how we were able to get an investigation. So a few things happened. I filed an elder abuse claim in 2016 against the guardian in July, before they took my aunt, because the guardian had already neglected. She failed to pay any of my aunt's basic bills while my aunt was in her home. She didn't give her a penny of her own money for food or living, and the water was shut off at one point while I was there actually visiting, and the electricity was shut off at a certain point. The TV was shut off. She was simply not paying her bills and while she was there in the home. So I filed this complaint, and nothing much happened. But then a year later, the law changed, and they had the Office of Public and Professional Guardianship was created. And so I, you know, I'm pushing them. A year later, so a year after that, they're finally investigating. Well, over this past year, the Inspector General has been investigating the guardian. And it was because I was tracking each law. As soon as they had made any change that gave more leverage, I would make a call and say, now you have disciplinary, you know, guidelines. What are you going to do? And so that's been my strategy, is to track every change in law and then get on the phone. And now it's causing some waves. Again, I can't get into everything that's happening, but there seems to be now a triangulation of forces that are good all of a sudden, for whatever reason. You know, a number of these entities are now coming together, maybe because we're shining a greater light on it. I don't know. Or maybe because they found so much wrongdoing in the year-long investigation that they realize they can't, they want to be on the right side of history, because they know our family's not going away. Because I don't think they realize, you know, my mother's a retired journalist. I'm out of Columbia School of Journalism. We're beginning to use her network on this. And I'm a researcher by training and relentless.
Yes.
I'm a Taurus, the bull. You know, so now you got me. You know, I'm not going away. And I worked in media. And so, and both of my parents were civil rights, human rights activists. So I think they chose the wrong family.
They
took the wrong, and I have to say, we happen to be African American. Now, not that this will happen to anyone, but what that has allowed us to do also is now we have the NAACP involved locally, and because we found that there are other cases in Palm Coast, one at least under the same judge, that is very suspicious in terms of the lack of due process. Now, so not to say that that's why she was taken, because she's African American, but we can now leverage that community to
right.
say that this is modern day slavery, and it should not happen to anyone. And so there are some interesting forces.
Yeah, I've got some contacts in D.C. In the government there. That would be very interested in the aspect of this, of this lady being black. Not that they, I don't mean that like they are devoted only to, but would be interested in what's happening here as she is black. You know, not that it's going to be any comfort to you, but we see this disparity across the system when it comes to the variance in the treatment between people of color and people that are supposedly white. I don't know what the hell color I am. I have never figured it out. But anyway, you know, Luann, I'm sure at one point was pink, but I don't know. And
I turned red all the time, though.
But what I'm saying is there are many cases like this, and yours quite possibly is one of the most horrendous in the sense of you have assembled so much documentation showing them lying, showing mm-hmm. the court absolutely ignoring valid evidence, actually working against this woman in spite of evidence to the contrary. And what has the opposition, these predators, what have they produced to substantiate any of the claims they have made of any kind?
Nothing. I mean, and that's the thing, is that they have been relying on two things. One, trying to ignore all of the Orange County history. So that was one of the bifurcations. They're trying to make it so there is, like, it never existed because we have most of that documentation. And it shows the history of her not being incapacitated, her being targeted, you know, her taking the granddaughter out of the trust before any incapacity hearing, mm-hmm. all of these different things. We have audio and video recording from then that mm-hmm. confirms the good relationship between the sisters, all the things that they put in court. We can,
yes.
we have
refute.
Evidence to refute.
Yes.
But then yes. when you get to Flagler is when mm-hmm. they start to, again, have secret that they voided my aunt's trust. You mentioned, you know, that they can't do that, but they did.
Yes, they do it every day, yes.
They've been taking all of these very improper actions, and my mother's only recourse is to mm-hmm. go for an expensive appeal. So we've had all these appeals, and one just came down where the Fifth District just denied it with no opinion. And so it's what they call, as you know, a conflict, what is it, conflict PCA, or, you know, basically we
yes.
can't now take it to the Supreme Court because there's no opinion. But there was clear...
Right.
errors of law in the law in the ruling.
Okay. I have a question for you. When mm-hmm. we were dealing with I don't know if you're familiar with the case of Anastasia Adams there in Virginia, one of the most horrendous, god awful things that I ever witnessed. And I personally, along with her sister and many other people, tried to get the NAACP involved, and they would not. They would not become involved on Anastasia's behalf. And what that woman went through is, my God, what a nightmare. But how did you manage to get the NAACP involved?
Yeah. Again, it's the kind of that working the network in the sense of we know some people I won't go into who, but there are some significant people. One in particular, you know, he suggested the NAACP, and so we called the D.C. office. But then a friend of mine said, call the local office, and I hadn't really
mm-hmm.
thought about it. And so I just called, and what happened was amazing in the sense that the president of the local office knows my aunt and has known her for 20 years, and my uncle. And she was shocked that this has happened. But she wasn't shocked that it was happening, because she then informed me that there were 10 other cases in Palm Coast. And so because of those two things, one, that she recognized the name and she knew, she called me back right away, because
uh-huh.
I know your aunt. And then the second thing was, I know that, you know, this is something we have now, just over the last 2 years, have become aware of. And they have been pushing up against the same fraud with the court, actually. And
right.
even though it's the NAACP as an organization, the court is still making illegal rulings that are just outrageous. That they have to also appeal.
One of the other things that I have looked into over the years and contacted many, many times is the ACLU. Now, since these probate courts are positioned on depriving you of your rights without due process, I would have thought the ACLU would have jumped on this, but I have concluded, Terry, that since these people this is happening to are not illegal immigrants or undocumented workers, however you want to refer to them, the ACLU isn't interested. And since they are supposed to be a civil liberties union and protecting people's rights, I'm trying to figure out why we can't get them involved and get them on this. But they absolutely won't. ARP
I was disappointed.
Is another one.
Yeah. Well, no, I reached out to the ACLU, and I was very disappointed because they instantly said, we don't get involved in this kind of thing. You know,
right.
And over the last 2 years, particularly in 2016, right when she was taken, I called Governor Scott's office. I called Attorney Pam Bondi's office. I called the Chief Judge Terrence Perkins' office. I work the phones. I the senators, the local senators,
yes.
the state, all of them. So they're all very aware of this case. And you know, the aging, the Susan Collins, Senator Collins, in Congress, she in her office, she's very interested in hearing actually about it and has been tracking it. But you know, so there are a number of people who are aware of the case, but none of them in the state, as you know, it was useless.
Yeah.
I mean, the Adult Protective Services was probably the most just infuriating conversation because at a certain point, someone basically said, it's my job to convince you that your aunt is okay. I mean, it's almost verbatim. It's my job. He was a handler, and it was his job to convince me. I said, why do you have to convince me? Why can't we simply see her? You know, you can even have a sheriff escort us in if you need to do that or something. But
I wanted to interject here real quickly. I've gotten two messages here from people who claim they are attorneys, and both of them are saying that I am bordering on practicing law without a license. Well, I have news for the two of you, if you in fact actually are attorneys. You also are practicing law without a license. You do not have any such license. Only the state can issue a license, and it never has. What you have is a bar union dues card. That's what you have. So you also are practicing law without a license. So
there
I'm going to set up my own union, make it Marty's Union of people who don't associate with the Bar Association, but we like to read the law. So anyway, moving on.
But you bring up something really interesting, though. If someone's claiming that you're practicing law without a license, what are we supposed to do in order to fight this? If we can't, then study the law and use the law, you know, to help our families and to help people in this situation. Yeah,
you go back to the Constitution of the United States, and it says the law will be applied equally. By extension, that means we all have access equally to it. There is nothing in there that says, wait a minute, you've got to be a bar union member, in other words, to get into, you know, and say anything about the law. There's nothing in our Constitution. These are illegal constructs. They have been used to monopolize our judicial system. They are the creators of these probate tribunals, and they were set up specifically to avoid the Constitution, your rights and protections, and your right to due process. Were doing was legal and legitimate and lawful and constitutional, this would take place in a civil court in front of a jury who would hear all evidence. The judge would not be allowed to preclude evidence, refuse to accept your evidence, refuse to allow the person to speak for themselves, and allow that jury to make a determination. Should that person be guardianized? But in either case, that should never facilitate the theft of identity and the theft of the estate, ever.
I personally think that we need to have jury trials. I mean, how can we put that into our probate courts? I mean, what do we have to do? Put a you know, go to legislation and say, hey, let's start doing laws on just no more judges involved, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way for us to put jury in there? I mean,
Terry. Let me just interject that we have I'll say this because my mother put it forth, because, again, they're saying you can't talk about things that are, you know, that are court documents and different things. But my mother put in recently a fraud on the court a document and demanding a hearing and a jury trial, because there's again, I've been studying the Florida laws.
Yes.
And it was her right under whatever the statute to do that. And she has been waiting for 2 months, and she keeps following up with the judicial assistant and all to get a response. And she has not received a response at all. And yet, anything that the other side puts in, they get an instant response. And they get an instant response, and it's usually just accepting whatever they put in. Whereas my mother will put something in, and she'll wait and wait and wait, or she'll get an instant denial.
There you go. Well, the reason this is why they set up the probate system as a tertiary court, as a tribunal, because they are not forced to follow the law. They don't have to follow the rules of evidence, the code of civil procedure. If you ever get a hold of it, if you want an eye-opener, Terry, get a hold of one of these bench handbooks for probate. It basically tells these people they can do whatever they want. We have, I don't know how many cases I have sitting here, court transcripts, where this person who is referring to themselves as a judge, which is a fraud, tells the people who are objecting to what's going on, the law is what I say it is. I don't want to hear about the Constitution and your rights. You mention the Constitution again, I'll put you in jail for contempt. Contempt of what?
Right.
Contempt of what? But they do it.
They do it. And there are two things you made me remember, is that early on, I put in a complaint with the Judicial Qualifications Commission against a judge. Again, I'm thinking I'm going through all these proper channels. This is 2 years ago before I learned as much as I know now about what's going on. So I'm thinking, oh, this is what I need to do. And finally, someone on the phone, I don't think she was really supposed to do this, but I had her on the phone long enough that she said, we're not going to do anything unless the judge is drunk on the stand. So that was the one thing I got from an assistant at the JQC. And then the second thing you made me think of was when I was talking to the sheriff's office. And finally, an investigator said, it doesn't have to be right as long as it is made legal. So basically, he was saying, as long as a judge signs off on it, we know that it's not right, but we have to stand down because there's nothing we can do if a judge is signing off on it. And so there's then what they call, there's no security of justice. Like Dr. King spoke of justice, a concept called security of justice. And we have none. We have none.
None.
But, you know, if you can't call law enforcement. The other thing is that the judge's husband used to be the captain in the sheriff's office in Volusia County, where my aunt was moved at some point. And so, again, no security of justice. How do we call law enforcement if we fear that they know each other, they all know each other? There's no place to turn, and that is an awful situation to be in. We were fearful of our own lives, actually, I have to say. At one point, there in Palm Coast, because my sister felt someone was following her. We felt that they were listening in on everything. We tested it out actually one day where we said something like, oh, they haven't come to get any clothes for Aunt Lily. She's probably really upset because she's a fashionista, you know. And then the very next day they came to get clothes.
Oh. Gosh almighty.
So, you know, I mean, we feel like we're living in the middle of a John Grisham novel or something. And the question is, what can be done? Like, who will take the moral authority and the leadership, you know, to say we need to put a stop to it? I think that we need to do what New York City did years ago, and they had where they swept out the police. Like, I forgot the person's name. There was a movie made out of it, too. But basically, you know, we need a guardianship czar and to do a sweep
across the country, of illegal judges and attorneys and make it, you know, something like they, again, did early on when they were sweeping out, you know, the police who were working with the drug dealers and all. In
that was Serpico. Yeah.
Serpico. That's it. I can't remember.
Yeah. I want to say somebody's bringing up here about judicial immunity and qualified immunity. First off, even though the Supreme Court here 2 years ago said judges have qualified immunity, they also put several people, Roberts, a few others in place. Samuel, what was the guy's name? I can't remember right off that. But they put them on the Supreme Court, and they issued a thing that there was qualified immunity for judges. That's if you're an actual judge of the law. But one of the things they questioned and grilled these men on was what they call stare decisi, which is issues already settled. Would you support that? Will you uphold that? Meaning if we already heard it, if the Supreme Court already heard it, will you promise not to address it again, even if somebody brings a valid argument in front of you? And, of course, they said, yes, we'll uphold it. Well, there were three Supreme Court rulings prior to this that said judges cannot claim immunity of any kind. They are supposed to be the expert in the courtroom. And if the persons standing before them cannot claim ignorance of the law for any reason as an excuse for why they did or didn't do something, neither can that judge. So we already had those three rulings. And, of course, Jerry DeCicci just went out the window because then they said, oh, they have qualified immunity. No, they do not. The law says, the Constitution says the law will be applied equally. It doesn't say except for judges.
Right.
You can't apply it. So if that person, now they can make an error and correct it, and there's not a problem with that. Their excuse for doing this was because if we don't give them immunity, they might be afraid to hand down certain rulings. Well, the only ones I could figure they would be afraid to hand down, Terry, are things that violate the Constitution, the law, and, you know, a few other things. Why else would you be afraid to hand down a ruling? This idea that they have immunity. Now, on that issue, and I've done extensive research on this and worked with two constitutional attorneys on it, you cannot sue a judge in their capacity as a judge, okay? But you can sue them civilly for malfeasance while they sit on the bench. But they don't want you to know that. Malfeasance is using your position you were in, currently or past, to harm the public. And so on that is something, I've got three people that are working on cases dealing exactly with those types of lawsuits. We have to go after these people that are parading around calling themselves a judge. They aren't judges in the sense of the law because they do not deal with law. And they do not deal with the Constitution. So by legal nomenclature, they are not judges. They are hearing examiners or ministerial clerks. And I'm sorry, baby, you got no immunity.
Well, see, I a lot of my work has been around what they call principled leadership in business. And so I think now there's need for a call. And we have Sir Richard, you know, Branson has a entity called the B Plan. And it's like plan A is not working. And then the B plan is really more around this principle leadership. So we need a B plan for our judiciary because this plan of, you know, having judges just, you know, be able to do whatever they want. Now, again, I'll say that in Orange County, we had two decent judges. But, you know, in Flagler County, it just went completely into the realm of exploitation. And so it is a question of who polices our judges. Just because you wear a black robe doesn't mean you can, you know, commit crimes. You might as well have you might as well have a white robe on. You know, my great uncle James Atkins was an advisor to President Roosevelt. He was what they call one of the black cabinet. And so he advised on education, and he wrote the book In the Age of Jim Crow. And now we're in you know, Jim Crow 2.0.
Right.
You know,
yeah, there you go.
In relation to the probate court, which was the court, as you know, that, you know, basically adjudicated, you know, turning people into pieces of property in terms
yes.
of slavery. And they're doing
yes.
the same thing now through the probate court. We do need
yes.
to abolish it.
And it is a monetization and a commodifying of human beings. It is trafficking. And you're exactly right. They are converted to chattel, movable property and goods. They are no longer treated as a human being. They are no longer afforded any rights, no protections, nothing. Everything is stripped from them. I have people here saying, oh, we need them. No, we don't need them. We don't need anything of the kind, not as it exists today. We do not
well,
need
also,
this.
What about family? I mean, I the other part of this is that my mother has a history of taking care of her family members. So she took care of her other sister who had stage 4 breast cancer. She took care of my father who had Alzheimer's. She took care of her aunt who was in her, made it to 101 almost. So she is the go-to person in the family. It was,
right.
None of it was for financial anything. It was
right.
simply because that's what you do as a family. And,
yes.
and so that's the question I'm getting from a lot of my friends and people who hear about this is, what about, like, why, how can this happen if there are family members who are willing and able to be there?
Yeah.
Like, how
well,
is it possible?
Terry, most of the time, they won't let those people speak, and they won't let
right.
them enter any evidence. They won't let them refute with evidence anything the predators are saying, and then they, when they write up the court transcript, if they even do that, it's that nobody objected, nobody stepped forward, none of the family wanted them, nobody offered to take them, so we have no choice, and it's all a lie. It's an absolute lie. And then if
well, let's
something
talk about
does,
the transcript. No, it's well, let's
yeah.
talk about
ahead,
Marty.
Whatever
it's a profitable. It's a profitable organization in our courtrooms. That's
mm-hmm.
what
right.
it is.
Right.
Right.
It's profitable. I mean, but
it's,
you
yeah.
talk about transcripts. You know, the other thing is they have been making it so my mother can't access transcripts. That is a basic element of our due process, to be able to get the record and in order to appeal. And so what happens here is, again, they close the hearing, they seal
yep.
the transcripts.
Yep.
They have secret hearings. So we actually,
yes.
we didn't even know, my mother was not a party, didn't know even about the hearing when they voided the trust, even though she was a party too, and she found that later. And
mm-hmm.
so that makes it so you can't appeal.
Right.
You know, so
right.
they take away every bit of, you know, what is the normal process of our laws in the United States of America. Like, I was born in, I'm American, but I was born in Ghana in West Africa, and my family lived around the world, and we've been through a lot of, I witnessed the stoning and different things in other places, but to be able to witness this on our soil is just outrageous. And I have friends in the World Economic Forum Network and the Young Global Leader Network, and they're hearing about this in Florida, and they're at the same time, you know, saving refugees, different places. They all do really good work. And they're
yes.
wondering, how is this happening in Palm Coast, Florida? You know,
yeah.
when it sounds like it's one of these other places where they're
right.
trying to, you know, save refugees or something. And instead,
well,
we're trafficking our seniors.
Well, I've made mention here a few years back, and people just scream bloody murder, that we were just two steps away from the public auction block again. And then, strangely enough, we found where the state of Ohio was listing elderly individuals with assets online and taking bids for guardianship. That lasted about 4 days, and they took that down. But
oh
the internet is the new auction block. It is the new selling off of human beings as commodities, as things, as chattel property. The reason that guardian is able to get away with what they do is because you have been commodified. You no longer exist. Mm-hmm. They have taken your identity. You are dead in the law. You have no rights. You are no different than if they were selling a car.
That's true.
There's no difference. There's no difference.
Well, but also, even in the terminology, I mean, the guardian now is in charge of my aunt's person and property. And so whenever
yes.
I say that, I'm like, that's slavery. You know,
yes.
that she's in charge of her person and property, this stranger, and who's basically paying herself large amounts out of the estate, and the judge is just signing off on it. I mean, that's servitude.
Okay. I've got another message here, and someone said it isn't slavery because they aren't forced to work. The idea of slavery was not work, but what the work produced.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That was the idea behind slavery. It was making money off the labor of these individuals they had bought and sold in the probate system. They are making money off the life work of someone else, and they are stealing it, and this is profitable to them. This is where the profit comes in. So, yes, it is a form of human slavery. It is human trafficking. It's no different, I say, than the auction box where they used to stand them up there and auction them off, and they were bid on by how much it looked like they could work, what kind of shape they were in. Now it's how many assets do you have? What are your assets comprised of? How much is it worth it to me to turn you into a thing so I can take what you've got? That's what
awful.
It's all about.
It is. And if you don't like, if whoever said that doesn't like the word slavery, then use trafficking. Because according, again, if you read the United Nations Protocol on Trafficking, this meets the three constituent elements. So if you don't like the word, you know, slavery, use trafficking. Either way, it should be illegal. It has also been equated to Nazi Germany. You know, a group of people have been targeted. They have been taken away from their home and their families. Their assets are being pillaged, and they're being left to, you know, die, or they're being forced to at a certain point. You know,
as someone said in the last few days, you know, the only difference between guardianship in the United States and the concentration camps is we haven't started up the gas ovens just yet. And you know, and I truly believe that, but we're doing it through hospice.
Also through medication. Or through the isolation. You don't even have to, you know, get to the point of medication. If, like my aunt, situation, I think about it, 2 years. And thank goodness when my mother spoke to her in December 2017, she was still there. She was listening. Apparently, I'm hearing this from my mother, since no one else could be on the phone. And so my aunt knew what was going on and apparently began to question, you know, like, why don't you have my phone number? She was wondering, you know, why you're not visiting. And my mother couldn't talk about the case.
Mm-hmm.
So they set it up so she couldn't explain what was going on. But as soon as my aunt started questioning, apparently the guardian hung up. And ended the conversation. So my aunt doesn't even know why she was hung up on by her sister, you know, that why it ended. And she hasn't spoken to her since. And that's December 2017. So only two conversations within two years. So even prisoners get phone calls. So it's like she's being treated like she's a terrorist in Guantanamo Bay or something like that. You know,
Jerry, one of the things I've brought up is, and when I talk to people that are elderly, and by elderly I mean even older than me, but when I talk to them and they're afraid of this, they're aware of it, and they're afraid of it, I told them, I said, if it ever looks like APS is going to show up, I want you to run out and rob a bank, and I said, and then turn yourself into the police. And this lady said, why? And I said, because this way you will get an attorney, you will preserve your rights, you'll have due process, and you're going to go to prison, but you will have three hots and a cot, you'll get medical care, and at least a shower every 3 days, which is more than you're going to get in a nursing home. So keep a bank in mind, get one eyeballed, and in case this starts up, just head right for that bank and tell them you're there to hold them up. And I said, it'll cure everything. And
it sounds outrageous, but, you know,
it sounds outrageous, but it's true. You know?
But it's true. And early on, I have to say, two attorneys said to us that you're not going to make any headway, and so you need to just kidnap her back. Like, these are two attorneys who were very, mm-hmm. very well-known and very respected, but they just said the system is not going to work. But we didn't want to do something illegal, you know, so we're trying mm-hmm. not to do things that are against the
right.
law. And so we're trying to work within the law, but the law itself,
Now,
the
I'm telling you, Terry, you're doing this wrong. Go get her, take her to the nearest bank, tell her to go in there, and tell them she's robbing them. They'll arrest her. You'll get to visit her at least once a week. She'll be fed regularly. You'll get to talk to her on the phone. She'll be
right.
taken care of medically. I mean, come on now. Let's work this system. I'm being facetious, of course. The point I'm trying to make here is, if you were a criminal, you would get
mm-hmm.
better treatment. You would have a preservation of your rights. You would be
right.
able to speak for yourself. You would be taken care of in prison, if you can consider that being taken care of. But when you consider it to the isolation and the neglect in these nursing homes, I see it as a viable alternative, personally. I think I could fend quite well in prison. But
I would love to hear if there are any of your listeners who are psychologists or psychiatrists, because we need even the American Psychology Association or something
mm-hmm.
to weigh in on the isolation, and that this is real. That if you are isolating my aunt for 2 years from her family and a successful family support system that was in place for 5 years, my sister
mm-hmm.
there every day, my mother
mm-hmm.
there, and they suddenly, abruptly, shift that.
Take this away, yes.
Right. What does that
yeah.
do to a person's psyche? Like, we need
yes.
people to begin to weigh in more seriously and show some leadership, in this area.
Exactly. Listen, we've only got about 3 minutes left here. I want to give you about a minute and a half to make a final statement if you want, and give out contact information, Terry.
Okay. Well, my call is to get the word out to as many people as possible about my aunt's case and cases like this. We need to shine a light on what's going on. Because, again, the criminals like to hide in the dark. And go to elderdignity.org and watch the videos of my aunt and make your own comments. And if you have any suggestions, you can also email elderdignity@hotmail.com.
Excellent.
So we need help.
Okay. We all do. Luann, you got anything last you want to add to this?
Yeah. The only thing I can say is abolish probate. Every time I hear these stories, it's the only thing we can do. I mean,
get this into a civil court of law.
Absolutely.
Yep, I agree. Well, we're going to be back next Monday night. We'll be back on schedule, and I'm hoping Carly will be back next Tuesday with her shows on hospice. She, of course, has just had to deal with the death of her grandmother, and that set her back a little bit. On Wednesday night, of course, is Wild Horse and Burro Radio, and we're fighting a major battle trying to save the last 60,000 wild horses that BLM is determined to obliterate. We've been doing those shows for going on 5 years. On Thursday night, I'll be back with Whistleblowers. Carolyn Douglas will be coming on, and we will be talking about the process in probate, family courts, and how they get away with what they get away with. And quite honestly, she is one of the leading experts in the fields of what goes on behind the scenes that you never knew about. She'll scare you to death. I recommend her book, The Dark Side, A Treatise on Law and Judging, and she now has Volume 2 out. I highly recommend the book, both available on Amazon. We will be doing an extra show this week on whistleblowers, following up on the situation in forestry. Probably we'll be doing that Friday evening. A lot has happened with the 2020 expose on the women of forestry who've been molested and raped. Plus, now we have a large number of men coming forward, many of them veterans, who have been assaulted in the forestry service. So we're going to be talking to them, too, over the next few weeks. Lise, we'll be back next Monday evening. Terry, I want to thank you for coming on. This has been a tremendous conversation, and we will be following up with you.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
All right.
For coming on.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. And Luann, thanks as always for being here. And
absolutely.
We'll talk to you all next week. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.